Circuit. Hear ye. All persons having business before this honorable court are admonished to draw near and give their attention as the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen. First case for argument is Herzog versus Village of Winnetka. Mr. Flaxman.
Thank you. May it please the court. This is a case with District Judge granting summary judgment, and there were disputed questions of fact. The case arises from a DUI arrest, and I don't know if the members of this court have much experience with the prosecution of DUI cases. It might have been a while ago. Generally, DUI cases...
We call them DWI then, but I thought DUI was a birth control device.
Currently, now and probably when there were DWIs, start out with what's called a probable cause ticket, where the officer has some reason, he or she says, to stop the motorist. Usually that's weaving or changing lanes, or in this case, the officer said that Ms. Herzog was speeding. Ms. Herzog said, I pulled over because the lights weren't working right. I saw an officer. I felt it was safe to pull over, so I pulled over. After the stop in DWI or DUI cases, the officer will administer performance tests. Generally, the officer will say, I smell the odor of an alcoholic beverage about the vehicle and about the person. I ask the person to step out of the vehicle and to walk in a straight line, stand on one leg, follow my finger, and to, in this case, count backwards. Generally, in DUI cases, the officer will say the person failed all of those tests. And in this case, that's exactly what the officer says. She also said, I smelled alcohol from the car and from Ms. Herzog. Ms. Herzog said, I didn't fail the test. I performed all the tests well. What can happen now, what couldn't happen back when we had DWI cases, is that the officer, many officers have what's called a personal breath screening device, which is a portable breathalyzer, which they can use under Illinois law to assist them in deciding if there's probable cause. The officer under the statute is supposed to ask the person, would you like to blow into this device? And this device will give an on-the-scene evaluation of whether there's alcohol. In this case, that's what the officer says she did, and she was amazed to see that it was 000. Ms. Herzog says that after I was handcuffed, after I'd been thrown down to the ground, pushed down to the ground by the officer for no reason, she stuck this thing into my mouth and broke a tooth. That's another disputed question of fact. After, in typical DUI cases, and as happened here, the person has been arrested, handcuffed, taken to the police station, and given these statutory warnings saying that if you don't consent to a breathalyzer, you'll lose your license for 6 months. Ms. Herzog consented to the breathalyzer, performed the breathalyzer, and lo and behold, once again, 000. No blood, no alcohol in her.
There are other things than alcohol, however, that fall within the purview of DUI.
Well, the district judge said that antibiotics maybe could have been an intoxicating drug in this case. And the statute talks about being under the effect of chemical, obviously it could be under the effect of drugs.
So you wouldn't show any alcohol on the blood, on the balloon if you were, say, under the influence of cocaine, heroin, marijuana?
That's absolutely correct. Usually there'd be some indicia of drug use. There'd be the smell of marijuana. There'd be some paraphernalia in the car. There'd be...
But not always.
Well, in this case, there was nothing.
I know.
And the officer said, according to the district judge, viewed in the light most favorable to the officer, which is the jury question, not the summary judgment question, since she failed all the...
A probable cause initially is simply a legal question, isn't it? There's nothing to do with...
The qualified immunity question is a legal question. Whether
we're talking about probable cause for the arrest, are we not?
The officer said I had probable cause to arrest because...
The issue of whether or not there was probable cause for arrest, if the factual situation isn't disputed in its first instance, becomes purely a matter of law.
If the facts are in dispute?
Pardon?
If the facts are in dispute...
I said assuming sufficient facts not in dispute.
Oh, then...
Then it's a question of law.
That's correct.
Okay.
And in this case, all of the facts are in dispute about the performance test. And then there's the next question is which is Judge Bauer's question, is what's the justification, what's the reasonable suspicion to believe that Ms. Herzog is under the effects of some kinds of drugs? Is it because she said, well, I'm taking antibiotics? That's what the district judge said was made it reasonable to take her to the hospital for blood and urine testing, but Illinois doesn't make it illegal to drive while you're taking antibiotics.
No, nor does the police officer have to believe that she was taking antibiotics anymore, and you have to believe she said, I had one beer.
But when a police officer lies about, I could smell alcohol coming from her, we have to really have a jury to decide what the facts are. This officer said, I smelled alcohol coming from Ms. Herzog. I smelled alcohol coming from the car. There was none. The other officer, Officer Collar, said, well, I didn't smell any alcohol. And this is the case where we have objective evidence that the cop is making stuff up about smelling alcohol. The argument that Ms. Herzog says, the officer pushed me to the ground for no reason. And the officer said, I didn't do that. And the district just said, well, those facts are in dispute, but, you know, it didn't cause serious injury, so it's not a 1983 action. That hasn't been the law for a long time in the circuit. And I don't think the court should turn its back on 15 years of jurisprudence and the Supreme Court decision and say, we need serious injury in 1983 cases. This is a case where maybe a jury would find for the officer, maybe a jury would not find for the officers, but the district judge should not be making these factual determinations on the record.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Flowers.
Thank you.
Mr. Hardigan?
Please, the court. It's Ms. Cadle, my colleague, also will argue too. Your Honor,
the customary to sit down and wait until you're.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. We have to view the
text. You want to, you know, do a duet or something.
Sorry, Judge.
We haven't seen that, but it's only the first time.
There's three things I think the court must address.
What I don't understand about it, I don't think I've ever seen this. You have accepted all statements made in the plaintiff's statement of facts, not only as true, but as complete. So all we have to do, I take it, is read the plaintiff's statement of facts and see whether, if all those facts not only are true, but are the complete record of what happened, she stated the claim.
Well, Your Honor, I think there's
to which the answer, I think, is yes, because her narration of facts describes totally unreasonable police conduct. These may not be the true facts,
right,
but you've accepted for purposes of this appeal that we should treat them as true and complete. I don't see where that leads your case.
Well, I think we accept the fact that this is what their contention is.
No, that's not what you said. You you want me to read what you said?
No, I understand.
You know what you said. Mm-hmm. You said you're accepting this statement of facts is true and complete.
We accepted the fact as far as her testimony goes.
No, that's not what you said. You said you accept the statement of facts in her brief, whether it's based on her testimony, on her dreams, or anything. That's what you said.
But we also have listed our facts with contained
no,
within
you
the
didn't
brief.
List your facts. You
contained
don't have
the argument.
Facts in your brief.
Contained within the argument.
You say you make no dispute with the factual statement submitted by the plaintiff and accept all statements made therein as true and complete. Now, starting from that premise, tell me how this statement of facts in her brief fails to state a claim.
But I think there's legal issues here. There's qualified immunity, which is a legal issue. There's
I don't see how qualified immunity enters in. If she's right in what she said, and she may not be, I mean, maybe a tissue of lies or something, but if it's all true, about shoving her, about forcing this thing into her mouth, about after she'd passed all these tests, lying about whether there was alcohol in our breath and all that stuff. If all is true, what issue is remains for qualified immunity?
Well, Judge, we have addressed facts within the body of the brief as far as our,
from
our perspective.
I'm sorry, you can't do that. You did not submit a statement of facts. Instead, you accepted explicitly and unequivocally her statement of facts. I don't know why you did it, but you did it. Seems to me you're stuck with that.
There are legal issues here, Judge.
Well, what are they?
Probable cause, the judge...
Well, how on the basis of her statement of facts can you say there's probable cause?
As far as the qualified immunity issue is concerned here...
Okay, so no probable cause. So now you're discussing qualified immunity?
We think there's probable cause.
How can there be probable cause on the basis of her statement of facts?
I think the facts are contained within the body of our argument as far as...
I don't understand that. You've accepted her facts, not only as true and complete. Now you say that's not what you meant, because you have other facts scattered throughout your brief, which contradicts her facts.
Exactly. I think what was said is that these are the statements she made in her deposition.
That's not what you said. Of course, there's nothing like that in what you said.
I think that's the interpretation that was made when the brief was submitted, that this is what she testified
that's
to.
That's not what you said in your brief.
This is the implication or what we were trying to assert at the time, Judge. Should I continue? As far as the facts presented by counsel here, as far as the scene of the occurrence go, there were two tests that counsel forgot to mention. One is the diversion test, which...
What do you mean forgot to mention? Are you saying her statement of facts is incomplete?
No, I think that what happened is there's two tests that were done here at the scene. There was the diversion test, and then there was the test for sobriety. And both of those she admitted in her deposition as to failing one or two of those, both of those tests. In addition, she said she was on medication at the time, and also the officer smelled alcohol, and I think that...
Now, wait a second. The officer smelled alcohol. Mm-hmm. Are you claiming that is a fact that we should treat as true for purposes of this appeal?
But it is a fact as far as her deposition testimony is concerned.
What do you mean? What did you say?
She testified to that, the officer, Officer Powell.
10 minutes? Oh.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Officer Powell testified that in her deposition she smelled alcohol on Ms. Herzog.
Does that mean it's true?
It's true from our contention, from our point of view.
I don't understand. How can we determine that Officer Powell was telling the truth?
Well, as far as our argument goes, that would be considered as true.
Mm-hmm. I don't understand. If she says it's false and he says it's true, how are we supposed to determine who's telling the truth? Isn't that what
you
need
to
trial for?
You look to the totality of all the facts here.
I don't understand you. How did the totality of facts show that he was telling the truth and she was lying?
Because of the testing that she went through at the scene, her statements, her condition, her...
Well, this is a fight you're going to lose. I don't know why you're involved.
Okay.
Besides, you're eating into her time.
All right. Sure.
Ms. Cato?
If I could go back and address the discussion that you were having earlier, even if we take everything that she said in her factual statement as true, I believe there still is probable cause. She tells a story of stopping on the side of the road in the early morning hours, which alone gives the officer probable cause to go and make the investigatory stop. Then if we take the sequence of events as she's laid them out, there are disputed facts, but they're irrelevant for purposes.
Stopping a car late at night is probable cause to think you've committed a crime?
To make an investigatory stop. She stopped of her own accord, according to her facts.
You mean a policeman is supposed to go in and look and see why she stopped?
Right.
Okay.
She's on a major roadway, has pulled to the side.
See whether she's in trouble.
Right. And see
he
what's
did that.
Going on. She did that, yes.
She did that.
Yes.
And then what?
Then the sequence of events
as she
comes
described
into dispute.
It.
But as she describes it, she gets out of the car before the officer approaches. Uh-huh. That raises the suspicion even more because an officer is...
Now, wait a second. A suspicion? Because
a suspicion
she gets
of
out
what's
of the
going
car
on.
Before. I don't understand you. Policeman approaches, so you get out of the car to greet the policeman. That's suspicious. Where on earth?
It raises the officer's.
Where have you seen it stated that it is suspicious for someone to get out of his car when an officer approaches? You're in trouble. You're sitting in a car, and someone, could be a police officer, could be another driver, comes and parks behind you, presumably to find out what the problem is. Ordinary courtesy says you get out to greet this person. Where is it written that this is suspicious conduct? Do you have cases on that? Police
perhaps
manuals?
Is the wrong
word. Are you just making it up?
No.
Where is it found?
Officer Powell had testified that because the person got out
of
the car.
We don't have to believe Officer Powell, do
true.
We? We don't have
true.
Any.
For purposes of
we don't
yeah.
have any evidentiary hearing.
Continuing with her line of fact, the officer comes up and performs certain testing while she's sitting in the car, tells her, and Mrs. Herzog admits that she was told that she failed the test, regardless of if she feels that she failed the test, she was given that knowledge. The officer then takes her out of the car, escorts her to the side, where she allegedly pushes her to the ground. She suffers no bruising or scarring or scratches that are seen by her own physician the next day. She then performs a series of additional tests on her, including a
vision test. Her tooth was cracked.
Correct.
How do we know if the officer had reasonable belief that she failed the test?
That's a subjective test. It's very hard to put an objective analysis on something that's so subjective from the beginning. I mean, she's asking her to do a series
of tests.
Isn't
that a fact finder question?
I don't believe so. I mean, if we're requiring the officer
not
to...
Not that she didn't administer the test, whether she had reasonable belief that the test was not properly done by Ms. Herzog.
I believe there has to be some cutoff. If we're requiring officers to have some kind of psychic knowledge that a person is going to blow in the breathalyzer and blow more than a 0.0, we would never allow them to do the breathalyzer. If we're requiring the officer to come up with some kind of objective proof.
Well, but we take her testimony as true, as you said, and she said she passed every test, did everything correctly.
Correct, but she also admits that she was told that she failed these subjective tests.
Right. How do we determine who to believe?
If Mrs. Herzog had given a different state of fact saying, I performed all these tests, the officer did not tell me that I failed these tests,
I'm accepting the fact that he said, or she said that Ms. Herzog failed it. But we have it there, right there, clearly at that point, a disputed issue of fact. It depends whether or not there was a reasonable belief on the officer.
Correct. I believe even...
And if we take as true the facts that she said, I passed them all, then how can the officer have a reasonable belief if we accept that she passed the test?
I think the argument is separate for purposes of our motion for summary judgment, that even if you believe that she did not have...
Even if we believe she passed the test?
Even if you believe she passed the test...
Then he was lying.
There's still probable
cause
there.
But then he was lying.
Or
immunity
applied.
But he was lying, wasn't it?
I'm sorry?
Wouldn't that mean he was lying? If she passed the test and he says you failed him, he's lying.
I don't believe so. I believe that's just a difference of opinion. If you have an officer who filled out the form...
That's why we have a jury or a fact finder to resolve that question.
I still think, despite that dispute in fact, qualified immunity would still apply in this situation because Officer Herzog would not have reason to know... I'm sorry, Officer Powell would not have reason to know that her evaluation... and her belief that Mrs. Herzog failed these tests was a violation of any constitutional right.
Hmm. Okay, thank you, Ms.
Thank
Taylor.
You.
Mr. Flaxman, how much time does he have? 3 minutes?
Don't talk anybody out of anything, Mr. Flaxman.
Is there any additional questions?
No.
Thank you.
Thank you very much to both counsel, all three counsel. Next case for our